And it's just about 10 o'clock on a Wednesday night, which means once again, and it's been a while, but once again it's time for Off the Hook. Yes, it's time for Off the Hook. I don't know where our theme music is, but there it is. Well, we had a sticky button there, but no longer. It's time for Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein, the program that asks the question, how do I make a phone call? And what in the world is going on with regards to phones, computers, and high tech? Is Big Brother really watching me, or is Big Brother a part of all of us? That's the question that we seek to answer, and we encourage our listeners to also call in and give their examples of what's been going on to them in the last couple of weeks. It's been a while. It's been 3 weeks since we've been on the air last. Much has happened. We're going to go through some listener mail. We're going to talk about some things that have happened. We may give some advice. And also, we'll be taking your phone calls, 212-279-3400. Of course, since it'll probably be a few minutes before we get to the phones, it's kind of pointless calling now, you know, because if you call now, after a couple of minutes, New York Telephone will disconnect you because there's no answer, they're not making any money. That's logic of the 90s, as far as the phone companies go. Doing it because they can. And continuing because we let them. Well, one thing that is not going to be continuing because we didn't let them is something in New Jersey. Several people sent in articles on this. Thank you very much to everybody in New Jersey that sent in articles on this most important news development. That concerns caller ID. As many of you know, New Jersey was the first state in the history of this nation to implement caller ID. And in a rather heavy-handed manner, they elected not to allow anybody to block their numbers, ever. Wasn't met with popular enchantment. But it continued because not too many people objected. Well, we objected on this program, a lot of you objected, the ACLU objected, and as of September 15th, things started to change. On that day, state regulators approved a settlement that for the first time will restrict the use of New Jersey Bell's controversial caller ID service, ending a long legal challenge over the right to privacy by callers. In a settlement worked out by Bell and the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, and by Bell they mean New Jersey Bell, the phone company will offer free per-call blocking for those who want to shield their numbers from caller ID subscribers. Per-call blocking is the kind of blocking where you have to do it every time. It's not a default setting. You have to dial *67 before every single phone call, or if you don't have touchtone, you have to dial 1167. All call blocking is far preferable. That's what we have here in New York, and that allows you to say to the phone company, look, I don't want to send my number ever. And then, every time you call a number, your number is not sent. Also, along with this, New Jersey Bell will be offering a related free service enabling caller ID customers to automatically reject calls from those who opt to block, kind of upping the ante there. The State Board of Regulatory Commissioners, affectionately known as the BRC, met in Trenton on September 15th, and they approved the settlement by a 3-0 vote. Said the agreement responded to the safety and privacy concerns expressed by many groups. With this decision, New Jersey joins 29 of the 33 states with caller ID to offer a blocking feature. Now, as most of you know, caller ID is an advanced electronic service first introduced 6 years ago. It allows subscribers to see the originating phone number of all incoming calls on a digital display screen before picking up a phone. Of New Jersey Bell's 3 million customers, about 250,000 of them subscribe to this service. Costs $6.50 a month for residential customers. And of course, you have to buy one of those little boxes that gives you that information. Now, I'm going to read a paragraph here which isn't quite right. It's not quite right. Something a little bit wrong with it. But we'll get back to that. We'll get back to what's wrong with this paragraph, because if we stop and pick apart every news story we read, we just never get through them. Here's the offending paragraph. The service only works on calls carried by New Jersey Bell and does not activate on long-distance calls from other states or between the 201 and 609 area codes. Okay, that's the offending paragraph. We'll get back to that in a little while. Caller ID has been the focus of nationwide debate over the issue of privacy since it was first developed. Many state utility regulators have refused to make it available without the provision of blocking for callers who want to remain anonymous. And, you know, we're not all criminals, those of us that want to remain anonymous. One state even found the service violated its wiretap laws and would not permit its usage in any form. It's not permitted in California, for example. And Pennsylvania, there are quite a bit of problems there, too. But as we mentioned, New Jersey was the first state to allow caller ID, giving Bell the go-ahead to offer it on an unrestricted basis. And while some opponents, including the Department of the Public Advocate, said callers should have the option to shield their numbers, New Jersey Bell maintained that the availability of blocking would diminish the value of the service. And since they're the ones that run the service, that's the way it was. That's how things came about. Not exactly fair to those of us who don't agree, but that's the way it's been. Last year, the ACLU filed a legal challenge to the service. A lot of that was based on various shelter groups, you know, organizations for battered women. Shelter groups complained that husbands and boyfriends had tracked their victims' locations through caller ID, and doctors and child services workers lamented the fact that their home numbers were revealed if they called clients and the clients had caller ID. For example, if you're a doctor and you live, you know, in some neighborhood where people aren't allowed to go, and you call some lowly patient, and that patient happens to have caller ID, well, they're going to find out your home number, and then they can call you anytime they want. It's really kind of annoying. But the fact of the matter is, it's something we should have a choice in, and we just didn't have a choice. The phone company also agreed to several other concessions. It was big of them. It plans to offer a free option exclusively to battered women's shelters and rape crisis centers that would allow them to block their number on all outgoing calls. In other words, all call block, which is a standard feature here in New York and many other states, but not available to any other customers in New Jersey. The company also agreed to offer free installation of phones that don't take incoming calls, again, available only to shelters. Seems if you're in New Jersey and you want to get decent phone service, you're best off opening up a shelter. Then you can get the kind of phone service everybody else gets. Now, there's another offending paragraph here. We're actually kind of crisscrossing between a couple of different news stories here, but this is something concerning the service that New Jersey Bell is now offering to allow people to block those people that block their numbers. So, if you wish to remain anonymous, well, you can tell those people not to be anonymous or you won't take their phone call. It's kind of silly, but that's the way things are going. What this particular article, and this one is from the Record, we have been reading from the Star Ledger as well. This particular paragraph says, if that particular option is chosen, calls could not be received from anyone using a phone, credit card, or calling through an operator because caller ID machines don't receive a number when those calls are made. Well, that's not correct, because the way blocking anonymous calls works is they block those calls that are made using the privacy feature. In other words, if you dial *67, the word private will show up on a caller ID box. If somebody calls using an operator, or calls using a calling card, or calls from another part of the country, the word unavailable or out of area will show up. It's not the same thing as private. And the phone company would be very foolish if they blocked those kind of calls from coming through, because that means no long-distance calls could be received. So I really doubt that's true. But it's understandable that newspapers will make that mistake. As long as we're going to criticize the newspapers a little bit, let's go back to that other offending paragraph concerning receiving caller ID data from other states. Well, we had a rather startling thing happen to us at 2600 Magazine this week. We have a caller ID box which we experiment with, and not here at the radio station. This is at 2600 Magazine. I feel I should point that out, because there's a lot of hysteria going on, and I'll clear that up in a little while too. But we experiment with it because, well, for one thing, it's important to know if caller ID works. A lot of people tell the phone company they don't want to send their number, but how do they really know? Until they call somebody who has caller ID and that person tells them if they can see their number or not. In many cases, the phone company has not done what they're supposed to do and has continued to send their number out. But something even more startling happened this week when we received a phone call with the 703 area code. Now, 703 is Virginia. We got a phone number all the way from Virginia. Now, according to the phone company, this is not supposed to happen. It's impossible. Caller ID only works within the state of New York. And that's why this paragraph that says that caller ID only works within the state of New Jersey is suspect. Obviously, something is afoot. And the only way we're going to find out is by watching the boxes. Now, I'd like to ask people to help us out here a little bit. It's going to involve some element of trust, because I'm going to be asking people to call a phone number that has caller ID. At least at the moment, it has caller ID. We forwarded the main office number of 2600 Magazine to a phone number that has caller ID, and that means anybody that calls in will have their number show up. Now, the reason we're doing this is to see just how far this spreads. We're particularly interested. We know it works from the 718 area code. We know it works from 212 and from 914 and, of course, from 516. What we'd like to know is if caller ID works from the 201 area code, in other words, New Jersey, or the 203 area code, Connecticut, or any other area code that might be outside of that particular zone, Pennsylvania, Alaska, who knows. What we'd like people to do is dial the following number, 516-751-2600. You don't have to wait for an answer. Just let it ring twice and hang up. You won't be charged. What that will tell us is if your number is being transmitted. If your number from New Jersey, say, is being transmitted into New York. If your number from Connecticut is being transferred into New York. We know numbers within those particular area codes in New York are already transmitted. And we do know now that at least one number in Virginia got transmitted too. It was in the 883 exchange, if anybody wants to check that out and see what kind of a switch it is. Something strange, perhaps. But it seems like we're on the verge of nationwide caller ID, although nobody has told us. And nobody will tell us until it's here. So next week we can announce the results of this particular, I guess you'd call it, listener poll. And please, don't be concerned that we'll see your phone number if you want to call from somewhere else. Call from a place you don't want the number to be transmitted from, or you don't care if the number is transmitted from. But we're not going to do anything with the numbers. We just want to see what area codes we're able to get this from, and then we'll report that back next week. So, again, if you're in New Jersey or in Connecticut or in any state outside New York, please give a call to that number, 516-751-2600. Let it ring twice. We'll see if the number shows up on the caller ID device. Yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing we're asking people to do, I know. But these are crazy times. And crazy times demand crazy solutions. Yeah, and there's been a lot of talk recently also about call return, which is something that a lot of people are upset about. A couple of weeks ago on this program, we told you how it's possible, although we don't know how, but it's possible to block call return. In other words, you can prevent somebody from calling you back. This has nothing to do with caller ID. Now, the reason we know that you can prevent this from happening is because, well, payphones are able to prevent it from happening. The number shows up on caller ID boxes. However, you cannot hit *69 and call them back. You get a recording. Major institutions, universities, businesses, that kind of thing, they have this option where you cannot *69 them. What we're trying to do is get that option available to individuals, but we face a problem in that we don't know what the option is. So if there's anyone out there that handles phone services for large institutions, businesses, universities, mental institutions, whatever, see if you can talk to your local phone company and find out if that service is available to you, and if so, what is it called? And then once we know that, we can start pushing to have it available for individual people as well. It's a long fight. It's a hard struggle, but we're getting there. We're getting there slowly but surely. I also want to clear up a misconception that's being passed around in the hacker world, and if it's passed around the hacker world a couple of years from now, it's going to make it into the real world, and that is that there is a service called call return denial that blocks call return. Well, yeah, there is such a service that is called call return denial. However, it's rather misnamed because it doesn't prevent people from calling you back. What it does is it prevents you from calling anybody back. In other words, it blocks *69 from working on your particular phone. That's for the kind of people that don't want to spend 75 cents every time they dial three buttons on their phone. That's all that does. It disables that particular function, but people can still call you back. Nothing has changed. All right. Yes, we have a couple of news items. A couple of other news items as well. We'll be taking phone calls in just a moment. Here's something crazy. New $839 million radar system for guiding the nation's jetliners. It's getting a few critical reviews from air traffic controllers. For instance, in Cleveland, a squirrel, cute little squirrel, chewed through a power line and disrupted the system for more than a week. Shocking. Here's something from the Risks Digest. Risks Digest being a wonderful electronic publication that you can subscribe to on the internet that tells you all about the risks of high technology. Sort of a version of what we do here, but with a lot of worldwide input. People from all over the world read this. This comes from Theodore M.P. Lee. Until such time as either the general public learns what to expect or digital authentication becomes widespread, I suspect we'll hear more of the following kind of incident. This academic year, the University of Wisconsin started providing email accounts, electronic mail, to all students at its Madison campus. Madison's a really cool city, too, I should point out. The students, both technical and non-technical, are being encouraged to use email as a way of interacting with their instructors, and obviously themselves. They access the accounts either through university-supplied machines scattered throughout the campus or through dial-up serial link protocol connections. A mix of Macintoshes, PCs, and other assorted workstations are involved. A couple of weeks ago, rather early in the school semester, a group of 5 students, several from the honors floor of one of the freshman dorms, just to let you know that can happen to anybody, several students were caught having forged several pieces of email. Shocking, isn't it? Most potentially damaging was a note saying it was from the director of housing to the chancellor of the university. And it was basically a note saying that the previous chancellor is now President Clinton's secretary of HHS, so the present chancellor is new to the job. The forged message was a submission of resignation. Now, Ward's secretary, just being born last week, had just returned from vacation also and apparently assumed the resignation was legitimate. The secretary accepted it and started to act upon it, and it was only during the course of doing that it was discovered to be a fake. The students also sent messages purporting to be from the chancellor to other students asking them to pay their tuition. They also forged a message from the chancellor saying he was going to come out of the closet and announce it on September 25th. The students were only caught through a combination of circumstances. First, since they used one of the dial-in connections, there were logs of who dialed in when. Secondly, during the course of their experiments, they botched some addresses, which caused enough traffic to go to the dead letter office, and the investigation was able to narrow down what was happening. It should be pointed out that the forgery was fairly easy to accomplish using the Eudora mail client on a Macintosh. The user has complete choice over the from field of a message. That's really basically what it is, editing the from field. In other words, imagine this. Imagine being able to write on an envelope, on a letter you send to the U.S. Postal Service. Imagine being able to write on that piece of paper, on the envelope, someone else's name and address. Of course, that's impossible. There's all kinds of security to prevent you from writing somebody else's name and address on an envelope. But on computers, it's very simple. The FBI is investigating whether any federal crime was involved, and needless to say, the students are likely to be expelled at the least. Now, it's pretty silly when you look at things like this. You look at pranks, college pranks. That's what people do. They make fake notes. They cause mayhem. They do juvenile things. And the only difference here is that they're using computers to do it. Would you expel somebody for writing somebody else's name and address on an envelope and pretending that somebody else mailed a letter? Probably not. They might get disciplinary action at the most. But do it on a Macintosh and you're out of here. Okay, one other kind of amusing story. It's amusing to most of us, but I guess it wouldn't be amusing if it happened to you. Well, come to think of it, it wouldn't be anything if it happened to you. I'll explain. The body of an elderly woman who died in 1990 lay undiscovered in her apartment for more than 3 years, while computers received her pension and automatically paid her bills, according to Swedish police. It's very unusual for someone to be dead so long without anyone else reacting, said a police duty officer in the Stockholm suburb of Farsta. The woman's last open mail was dated May 11, 1990. Indicating she had died at the age of 72. Her name has not been made public. Police were called to break into the apartment by its landlord after he had made repeated efforts to gain the occupant's permission to renovate it. I guess it gets so cold up there that I didn't notice the smell. Either that or I have very good walls. Seems to me something like that happened a few years ago, and I guess it's just going to keep happening as we have automated bill payers and credit card deposits and all that kind of thing. I don't know, there should be some way of checking to make sure that people are actually still alive, since we don't have any social interaction anymore and computers do all of our work for us. But that's probably too much to expect. All right, let's read a piece of listener mail and then we'll go to some phone calls. It's been a while, so basically any comments, questions, criticisms, whatever has been happening over the past several weeks, you can give us a call at 212-279-3400. But first, let's get into this particular letter. This comes from a listener in Sagticus, New York. You know, I never knew Sagticus was anything more than just a highway, but apparently there's a whole town there. That's really nice. Dear Emmanuel, there are a number of subjects I'd like to hear you address, as well as questions you might answer. Number one, electronic signatures. Federal Express, UPS, and other shipping companies are using portable electronic devices which carry package delivery information, which is perfectly fine with me. But now these devices are also being used to digitally record the customer's signature, which is ripe for misuse, fraud, and privacy invasion. I recently received a package via UPS and electronically signed for the package out of the novelty of it. I have never done so in the past, and it wasn't until later that I began to wonder if I was wise to have done so. What is UPS going to do with my signature? The package I received was the result of a phone call, mail-ordered credit card purchase. There is no signature for UPS to verify against. Not that they asked for my identification, so what is the purpose of signing electronically over the pen and paper method? It didn't occur to me at the time, but what if I had refused to electronically sign my name? Would or could UPS legally refuse to turn the package over to me? Is UPS building an electronic signature database? If so, why? And what are they doing with it? What security do they have for it, and under what conditions will they give a copy of my or anyone's signature away? What rights does the consumer have in regard to this? Very good questions, very important questions. UPS has been doing this for a few years now. They've had this electronic signature machine, I guess you'd call it. Basically, what you do is you're handed the equivalent of a clipboard, but you sign with something that is not really a pen, and your signature shows up on the screen, and it looks really terrible. It doesn't even look like your signature at all. And they store this electronically. And what I imagine they use it for, and this is from my questions to UPS, they use it simply to verify that it's you against packages you've signed for in the past. Of course, they're not able to do this on the spot. They simply store the information, and I guess if something comes up, they're able to reference it. For them, it makes things easier because they don't have to store paper. But as with the case of anything electronic, the privacy implications are rather profound. It's a lot easier to get a lot of information on people electronically. I don't think UPS is up to anything. But somebody else could be up to something with a similar device in the future. It definitely bears watching, and if anybody gets a UPS package in the next week, ask some questions, see what they know about it. Okay, number two. On a related subject, I read in the June 16, 1993 Newsday article, New License May Cut Time at Department of Motor Vehicles, that the New York State Department of Motor Vehicles is now using digitized photos, as well as electronic signatures of license holders, and maintaining them in DMV computers in the name of progress, speeding up the license/renewal process. Here is yet more data available to those who would invade our privacy. The DMV is already a source of information for privacy invaders. What will they do with our photographs and signatures? Perfectly forge our names, steal our identities to create fake passports, credit cards, etc.? Will they sign for merchandise we did not order but have charged to us? Yeah, all this is possible if somebody gains access to the system. And we all know that anybody that says their system is not vulnerable to unauthorized people gaining access to it, well, they're either very stupid or they're lying. The Department of Motor Vehicles is a great example of ineptitude, as I'm sure just about anybody knows. I was there just last week, in fact. I had a very simple thing to do. Very, very simple. I had to give back some license plates. You know, when I went out to Alaska this summer, I left the car there, but I brought the plates back. And when you do that, you have to give them the plates. I don't know exactly what they do with them. I think they destroy them, but they have to have them. They're very anal about that. They have to have their plates, and they have to give you a receipt saying that you gave them the plates. Okay. So I get on this line, and I'm waiting on the line, and, you know, everything's going fine. People are being helped. And then after a while, I realize it's been about 10 minutes, and I'm seeing the same people around me, and nobody seems to have moved. Everybody's getting a bit surly. And so eventually, somebody makes an announcement. And when they make an announcement at Motor Vehicles, it's always bad news. Always. It's like, you know, state-run radio being taken over by somebody. It's never quite good. And so people make an announcement saying the computer is down. Now, saying the building is on fire would be better news than saying the computer is down. But basically, the gist of it was the computer is down, and it's not going to be up for at least 15 minutes. And no, we can't do anything about it. This is happening all throughout New York State. Every motor vehicle computer in every office throughout New York State is down. Similar crowds of people, just like yourself, are being told this same bad news right now and are thinking the same thoughts as you. So take comfort in that fact. Bond together with their thoughts. Share their pain. And needless to say, when I asked, do you really need a computer to take back my license plates? The answer was, absolutely, we can't do anything without the computer. So, ineptitude. Ineptitude with a capital I. Having a system that is totally dependent on a host computer in another city, and when it goes down, you're unable to even take back somebody's license plates and handwrite them a receipt. There's no redundancy, no backup system, nothing. You're forced to just stand there and wait. And as it turned out, it was over half an hour. People were extremely patient. I mean, nobody pulled out Uzis or anything like that. It was very civilized. Of course, people weren't friendly either, but they weren't hostile. That's the important thing. So, Department of Motor Vehicles, yeah, they could learn a thing or two, and if they're experimenting with high technology, you got to start wondering just where that's going to go. Number three, we're back to the letter now. That was a long go sub there. Okay, we're back to the letter. Number three, despite your explanation of a new electronic switch being the cause of the 2-minute busy signal limit, I'm not sure you are right. Here is my theory. Allowing a person to maintain a busy signal for an extended period of time reproduces for free a phone smart service which costs 75 cents per use. It's called repeat dialing, *66 or 1166, which maintains a busy signal for up to half an hour, then calls you when the person answers. Do you really think that the 2-minute busy signal limit is a byproduct of a new switch, something that New York Telephone cannot prevent? In my opinion, New York Telephone has altered the system to make money off repeat dialing, especially in light of their current advertising of the repeat dialing feature. Slimy, isn't it? Yes, I agree completely. It is slimy, and it is certainly something that New York Telephone is pushing. But the fact of the matter is that the programming of our 5ESS is what determines that the busy signal stops or the ringing stops after a predetermined amount of time. Now, it may be the same mindset behind it all that says, let's impose these limits, but it is the limit coming from the switch. The switch, when it is installed, is able to have a total time, total number of rings, total number of busy signals. It's not related to that feature, except for the fact that New York Telephone is probably capitalizing, making the most out of it. And by the way, a warning on those *66 calls, if you're calling somebody back, calling through a busy signal, you're charged even if the call doesn't go through. I don't know if you have a single-frame VCR, what you might want to do is record one of their commercials on TV and then freeze it in that one frame that allows you to see the small print. You'll also need a large-screen TV set for this. Large-screen TV set and a VCR to freeze frame on the particularly the right moment. It might take you about a half hour or so to find the right frame, but when you find it, you'll see in little tiny print at the bottom of the screen that, yes, you are charged 75 cents per call, regardless of whether or not the call is completed. So, dial *66 now. 75 cents, that's it. You can cancel it, *86 to cancel it. You're still charged the 75 cents. Or, you can dial *66 and wait a half hour, and the phone will be busy. And then the system will give up, but you'll still be charged. That's the kind of progress we are making right now. Okay, number four, getting back to the letter. Is it considered wiretapping to dial up and access a person's answering machine messages without their knowledge or permission? Well, it's not considered wiretapping, but it is considered intrusion of some sort, electronic intrusion, the same basic thing as logging into somebody's computer account. Is it ever prosecuted? No, not really, unless you're a big, expensive corporation and can afford to pursue this. The best prevention against that kind of thing is to have some security and not have an answering machine that has a 2-digit code or a 1-digit code or something remarkably silly like that. So an ounce of prevention is worth two in the bush or something like that. Okay, number five. In case you did not get the message I left on your 2600 magazine answering machine, I found out how to defeat call return, *69. Simply dial *89. Suppose you make a phone call to someone who you do not want to call you back. He is away, thus no one answers your call, so you hang up. Pick up your phone, dial *89, and then hang up. When the person gets home and dials *69, he will get a recorded message informing him that the call cannot be reached using that method. That is completely false. That is not true at all. That is not what *89 does. Now, I'll explain the process to you. It's very, very important that people understand this. There is currently no way to defeat call return, other than calling through a long-distance company, calling through an operator, calling from a payphone, or calling from some business or institution that is able to block call return. There's no way for residences to do that in New York State, and certainly not in New Jersey. Now, by dialing *89, what you are doing is canceling a *69 that you have initiated. In other words, let's say you call me, okay? You let the phone ring twice, and I run out of the shower. I want to call you back. I don't know who you are. I dial *69 to call you back. However, your phone is busy. Well, *69 automatically puts you on kind of a camp mode where it will keep trying for a half hour. It's like dialing *66, but it's different. It'll keep trying for half an hour and then ring you back with a special ring when it gets through. That's automatic every time *69 is met with a busy signal. To cancel that, you would have to dial *89. If you dial *86, which is what you would dial to cancel a repeat call, which is *66, it won't work. It'll say it worked, but it will not work, and you'll get the call back when the person gets off the phone. So *89 simply cancels a *69 that you have initiated. And I can imagine all the people out there right now that are tearing their hair out saying, what is this nonsense this person is talking about? *89, *69, *66, I just want to make a phone call. I'm sorry, this is not my idea. But the fact of the matter is, this is the way the phone system works now, and this is something that we're going to have to get used to. And the best way to get used to it is to learn how to do it. Make some mistakes, make some experiments, do what you have to do. Okay, number six, you seem to have ignored the recent stories concerning ATM fraud. I have enclosed some photocopies, and yes, some of those photocopies which I looked at have to do with some stories we did cover, particularly the Connecticut ATM fraud, where some pranksters actually were able to set up a fake ATM and get people to enter their PINs and account numbers and all that kind of thing, and they were able to use it to withdraw money. We focus on ATM fraud for technology's sake. It's not something that is particularly clever. At least the withdrawing of money is not particularly clever. Figuring out how to make a fake machine, that's pretty clever. But when you actually resort to just stealing, well, it loses the cleverness. So yeah, we devote time to it, but just it's not the main thrust of our program here. Okay, number seven, on a recent show, you alluded to the fact that you were caller IDing people who called with questions, then dropped the matter. In my humble opinion, you either ought to stop the process, practice rather, or make it clear to your listeners what you're doing. Okay, I don't know where this is coming from. I don't know where this level of paranoia is emerging from. I've tried to make this clear. I've never in my life seen such misunderstandings going on. We do not have caller ID at this radio station. Never had it, never will. We don't subscribe to those kind of things. We have no interest in it. And I'm looking at the phone now. We don't have it. We really don't. I'm familiar with the phone system here, and we do not have that device. We do not have that service. You have to have both. You have to have a box, and you have to subscribe to the service. It costs $6.50 a month. It would be very, very expensive for us to do this month after month, line after line. And even if we did do it, it would be incredibly difficult for us to keep track of all the calls we get. We have no interest in that, and I never said on the air that we had caller ID here. We had any kind of such thing as that. We don't have it. We have the capability of having it. There's a difference. If we wanted it, we could get it. We don't want it, and we won't get it. And as long as I'm here, I'll see to it that we don't invade people's privacy in that way, okay? That is the story on that. Okay. Number eight. This is the final one. Some time back, you asked listeners to name the things that they would like to see for the telephone system, products, features, etc. Here's mine. The telecommunications future seems to be in either fiber optic networks or advanced wire systems, which will allow telephone, computer, audio, and video to be used simultaneously on the same lines. One company should not be allowed to control and monopolize the system. Our road and highway system is owned and maintained by the state as a necessary requirement for transportation. We need the same in regard to communications. I would like for New York State to own the new fiber optic telephone lines. Telephone companies would provide local switches which would plug into the system, thus allowing any company to do the same. Just as airlines now provide less but more convenient routes, phone companies would provide their own schedules, switch-to-switch service. A phone user could subscribe to a particular company's switches and or touch tone a different company access, sort of like long-distance company 10XXX. Interesting idea, and I encourage more people to write in with such detailed letters because they are interesting. Our address is Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. And here's something I'd like for people to take a good listen to.
Telephone, what town, please?
Now, that might sound like an operator, and as we've said before, that's a recording of an operator, but what New York Telephone now is doing, at least in many areas, is using the exact same recording for all operators. Actually, to be honest, I don't know what they use for male operators, because it would sound pretty silly, but if you're in the mood for it, this is what I suggest you do. Go over to a payphone, because they don't charge for information, and dial 411, and see if you don't hear that recording. And after the person says, "What town, please?" you say, "Hello?" And then you'll get a totally different voice, totally different person. And you'll see how New York Telephone is economizing not only on workers, but on the few workers they have left on their voices, on their vocal cords, because they don't have to say anything anymore. They play one computer to greet you, you do all the talking, and then they press a button and play the number. That's all there is to it. Okay, one other thing that I'd like to share with people.
AT&T has been disconnected. No further information is available about AT&T. Please check the number and dial again. Thank you for using MCI.
Oh, yes. That's comes to us courtesy of Touchtone John on the 2600 voicemail system. Real good. Real good. We don't know how that came about, but it's just one of those side benefits, I guess, of the technological age. Okay, it's time for us to take some phone calls at 212-279-3400. There's a couple of openings on the circuits here, and we'll try to get to everybody tonight. Hopefully we'll get to you before New York Telephone cuts you off. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Yes, hello, enjoying your show tonight. I have a question regarding the voice recognition capabilities of Apple's Quadra 660 and 840 AV.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that at all, but... why don't you ask the question, and I can maybe theorize.
Okay, sure. Recognition capabilities of the AT&T DSP chip that's built into this machine. And one of the things they said is that it could not do voice recognition over the phone lines because there wasn't enough bandwidth. And I'm wondering if there's any ways around that problem that you could maybe discuss.
Well, there is voice recognition over the phone lines. There's quite a bit of it, but it is limited right now. I mean, I'm not quite sure what that particular product you're talking about is offering. I am familiar with one that AT&T offers using collect calls and that kind of thing, where they recognize a couple of words.
You know, how is it that, I mean, in that instance, there's enough bandwidth for their machine to recognize your voice and respond to it, whereas apparently with this DSP chip that's built into the new Apple machine, it can't do that?
Well, I can't really answer that, to be honest. It seems to me, though, that it's possible to do just about anything voice-wise over the telephone because... you would need the extra bandwidth for such things as video signals, high-speed data, that kind of thing. To recognize voices, it doesn't seem like it's too difficult to capture certain key phrases. Now, we're not talking about anything really sophisticated here. We're talking about yes, no, 1 through 9, that kind of thing. And that's what most people do on voice recognition systems. They do exist. They are in use throughout the phone system. And I imagine they're getting more and more advanced. I'd like to demonstrate one, actually. One system that is in use right now. I'll check into the system you're talking about, though, and see if what exactly... who is it offered for, that particular system?
Well, it's Apple Computer, and the computer is the Quadra 840 AV.
Uh-huh.
And it has really some impressive voice recognition capabilities if you're sitting right in front of the machine talking to it.
Right.
Seems kind of ridiculous, but it actually works. The other question...
Well, a dedicated line, of course, would give you the same voice quality, but you'd have to get a dedicated line for that.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. What kind of a line would you get? And I've heard some people mention ISDN, I guess, where you have the 5664K, I guess. Or...
Well, for instance, most radio stations you listen to are traveling over phone lines, because that's how we get to the Empire State Building from here. We use phone lines because we use dedicated lines. So if you have an entire phone line dedicated to your use... you're not sharing the bandwidth with anybody else, you can get FM quality, you can get real voice quality. So it's just a question of you know, what you're willing to spend and how much technology there is at your disposal.
I see. And what's that actually called? I mean, if you're going to go to the telephone company and say, I want one of these high-quality lines to...
It's called a dedicated line.
Excuse me?
It's called a dedicated line.
It's a dedicated line?
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling. And what I'd like to do now is demonstrate, if we can. I'm not sure if our phone system is set up to do this, but let's give it a try here. Okay, we have a dial tone. We have successfully gotten a dial tone, and we have an outside line. What I'm going to try to do now is use AT&T to make a collect call, and this collect call will be going to a computer modem, so there won't be any chance of somebody picking up and accepting charges. Let's see if the voice recognition kicks in. All right, we have AT&T.
You are calling from a touch-tone phone. Please enter your calling card number and PIN now.
We're not going to do that. We're going to wait, and another computer will take over. Listen.
This is AT&T. Please say, collect, calling card, third number, person to person, or operator, now.
Strawberry milkshake.
Your request was not understood.
Bam.
Please say, collect, calling card.
Collect.
Number.
It understood
Thank
me.
You.
It
Please
understood
hold
me.
For billing acceptance.
It can understand you while it's talking. Now, this is what's going to happen.
I don't know if I'm coming
This
on.
Is the AT&T operator. It's an answering machine or a fax machine.
Is this a human?
That's a fax machine.
But you're a human, right?
Okay.
No, it's just I was talking to a computer, and then all of a sudden I was talking
to
a human.
Sometimes that happens. We have, you know.
Uh-huh. So now I would give my... Who would I give my name to? The computer didn't take my name.
Well, you're supposed to give it to me, but when they... it's a machine that's picking up on the other on the number you dial collect.
Uh-huh. So. I see. So you get my name just when they're picking up the phone then?
Right.
I see. Okay.
But, being that it was a fax machine.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Is this a new system?
No, this has been in effect for over a year.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I think for my area it might be new because I've never gotten it before.
Oh, usually you get two operators when you make it like collect.
Uh-huh.
Only person to person, the first operator handles.
Yeah.
But if you're making collect calls, then the second operator, the first operator comes, she takes the information,
mm-hmm.
and she go off the line. And if the part, but see, the purpose of that is that if the phone, if it rings and there's no answer, then, you know, you automatically hang up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, kind of save time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it saved a tremendous amount of time, but unfortunately, it's still picking up with that strange little beep.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a fax machine.
Yeah.
Do they have a machine connected to their phone?
Well, I'm going to have to call them and ask, except they have the machine, so I guess I'll write them a letter or something.
Oh, okay.
I'll get to the bottom of this one way or the other, though.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
This is AT&T.
Okay. Now, that is voice recognition, and... Rather primitive voice recognition. Not her, the computer. And you're going to see things like that a lot more often. It's very sophisticated, actually. It can talk back to you while you're talking to it. And it's kind of neat. All right, let's go back to the phones. Good evening. You're on brain off the hook.
Yeah. Good afternoon. Good evening. I'm wondering if what is the cheapest way to make a conference call? One to Chicago and one to Pittsburgh. I tried to do it today, and the phone company AT&T told me that I got to pay $20 for the connection, and then it was $1.30-something cents a minute.
Right. The cheapest way?
Yeah.
Get three-way.
Yeah, because I'm only on one line. That's why.
So get three-way. It costs $4 a month, maybe $5 a month, and you can place two calls and patch them together. Failing that, get a two-line phone and have a conference feature on the two-line phone. You have two phone lines that way. Believe me, the cheapest way is not to use any of the commercial services that allow conferencing. The cheapest way is to have two lines and patch them together yourself one way or the other, or have three-way.
I see. What if you have one line but two numbers on that particular line?
One line but two numbers, you mean like a personalized ringing number?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't really have two lines. You just have two numbers for one line.
But for one line, right.
Yeah, but you need to be able to get a second dial tone somehow. Now, you know, if you're able to call somebody else that has this feature, they can patch you together.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And there are offices that allow you to patch multiple parties together for absolutely nothing. Like, for instance, here at BAI, we can hit all 10 lines at once and patch everybody together. It's very simple to wire phone lines to do that. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Greetings, Emmanuel. I was listening to your article on what you were reading in the beginning of the show of New Jersey Bell.
Yeah.
And I called New Jersey Bell, tried the *67 feature, you know, to see if I can, you know, block, you know, the per-call caller ID.
And it doesn't work yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to work till January.
Right, and when I called the operator, she's like ignorant, you know, she's so ignorant of the situation.
Right, they have to search hard to find people that don't know what they're talking about, yeah, and that's what the operators, no, I don't want to insult operators, but no, a lot of operators don't really know what's going on, and they should.
I was being put on hold for an operator for 5 minutes trying to figure out this answer.
Uh-huh, yeah, you probably caused quite a bit of commotion down there.
Yeah, I probably scared the hell out of you.
Yeah, the thing is, operators need to ask more questions, and the phone companies need to encourage their operators to actually learn something about how the phone system works. It's very important.
True. Thanks, Emmanuel.
Okay.
Bye.
212-279-3400. You know, we only have a couple of minutes, so we'll try to get through these. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi, Emmanuel. Some information regarding a cool idea here in Brooklyn. I noticed, like, there's, like, up where I am, I have caller ID, and, you know, in different parts of Brooklyn,
uh-huh.
If they don't have the equipment in the exchange, I'm going to get out of area thing. But what I find it's insidious is that when they start installing the equipment in exchange, they're not letting people know, because I found that out with one of my friends where we used to call. I used to get out of area. And then one day I see his line on the phone, and he wasn't aware of it. And so, and also the same thing with that call return business.
Right, they don't tell you.
Yeah, but also on call return, like... Say I call you, and then you call me back. If your line's not blocked, your line's coming right through is on the call return also.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true. And the fact is, this is interesting. They claim they block the number from showing up. If you have privacy, if you have all call restrict.
That's what I supposedly have. I mean, I have all call ID, but I have call restrict supposedly.
Right. Now, you there's no way yet that residences can block somebody from calling back. However, on the local itemization, what shows up is the area code, your exchange, and then four zeros. I thought it would be four X's, but it's four zeros. That's kind of silly, because there are actually phone numbers that end in four zeros. And the first time I saw that on my local itemization, I was wondering why I called this strange number with four zeros at the end. But that's how they choose to do it, and I imagine it's not too difficult to figure out what number you called.
One other fast question. When you call 800 information, is that supposed to be a free call or a charge?
No, 800 information is free. I'm surprised they haven't figured out a way to charge for that yet.
But you know what it is? The operators don't know what they're talking about, because I had to call New Jersey to find out a phone number, so I got charged like 65 cents.
Right.
And I had forgotten all about it. So I called the 800 information, asked them if it's a free call, and they said, no, people get it confused, because it's... It's 800, but the 555-1212, even their operators don't even know what's going on there.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, a lot of us don't know what's going on either. Really, operators are, a lot of people tell me this. They say I should take it easy on the operators, and they're right to a degree, because operators are only human. They're as human as we are. We expect more of them because they're running the phone system. You know, they're really in control. But the surprising thing is, they don't know anything more about the phone system than we do.
Yeah, I guess it's just...
It's kind of scary. Yeah, and the representatives, same thing. And some of the technicians, too, believe it or not.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for calling. We have time for one more call. Good evening. Oh, I guess we'll go to a better call than that. Good evening.
Yeah, hi, Emmanuel. I was wondering, is it possible to send a false number to somebody's caller ID box?
It's possible to do things to a caller ID. Yes, of course it's possible to do this if you're able to manipulate that data in some way, the data that comes between the first and second ring. If you're able to somehow get something to be sent to the person's local phone, you could do it. I have yet to see anybody actually successfully do this.
Right.
It is, however, possible to spoof the caller ID box in a couple of different ways. For instance, if you call somebody and they're busy, and then you star 66 onto their line, and then it calls you back when it's not busy anymore.
Uh-huh.
If you have caller ID, it will look as if that person is calling you. In other words, their number will show up. They've never called you, but their number is showing up in your caller ID box. This could be used to falsely accuse somebody of calling you.
Right.
Say, look, you called me at this date. The caller ID box doesn't lie. But, of course, it can be manipulated just like any kind of data can be.
Right. Manuel, could you do me a quick favor?
It's got to be quick because we're out of time.
I'm trying to test the Touchtone decoder box. Would you play a Touchtone over the air for me so I can see if it works?
Okay, sure. What Touchtone would you like?
Anything you want. Let me see if I can see what it is.
Okay, hold on. Are you going to tell us live what it is?
I'm going to try.
Okay, here we go. Here come three Touchtones.
Didn't work.
Didn't work. Oh, well, I'm sorry to everybody else for having to
hear. No output going to a mono input, so I got to figure out a way to... changes.
Well, I'm sure you'll meet with success at some point, and if we can help you next week, we will.
Okay, I'd like to hear some discussion on cellular phones eventually, if you have, time.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
That's going to just about do it for us here today. The program is Off the Hook, and, of course, we'll be back next week with more fun and adventures. Please write to us. Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. Again, if you're in if you're in New Jersey or Connecticut and you want to help us with this caller ID experiment to see if caller ID numbers are being transmitted across state lines, call our special line that we have set up for tonight only, 516-751-2600. Let the phone ring twice, hang up, you won't be charged, and we'll see if phone numbers are actually transmitted from across state lines. So far, it works in Virginia for some reason. We don't know why. We'll keep you updated. This is Manuel Goldstein. Good night. Stay tuned for the news.
Are you concerned about health care? Now that we've heard from Bill and Hillary about their national health care proposal, some of your questions about health care reform may have been answered, while still other questions may have taken their place. So what is Clinton Care, and where is single payer in this debate? If you still have questions or think you have answers, tune in to Building Bridges, your community labor report, for a full hour of questions and answers on what has been described as the biggest change in the social contract in over 50 years, the Clinton Health Care Plan, on Building Bridges, Thursday, October 7th, 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. over WBAI 99.5 FM.
Hetepu Alafia, peace and blessings. I am Amina Akua Brown, host of African Spiritual Vibes, with Emanations. please open your spirits, hearts, and ears to hear holistic spiritual conversations. We bring you health, meditation, herbs, incense, crystals, and more. African spiritual vibes will relieve stress and uplift your spirits with love and harmony. Every first and last Sunday from 9 to 11 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Good evening. In the news tonight, is it time for the United States to pull out of Somalia? What will the Clinton administration do about increased poverty in America? And in New York, an update on the World Trade Center bombing trial and the Mullen Commission hearings. With these and other stories, I'm Jose Santiago in New York with Verna Avery Brown in Washington, and this is the news for Wednesday, October 6, 1993. First to these headlines topping the news.
President Clinton said today that the U.S. must conclude its role in Somalia without letting that nation return to chaos. Clinton offered no details on his policy, but said he would give more specifics tomorrow after further discussions with top advisors and members of Congress. Meanwhile, Senate leaders put off for a week any vote on the withdrawal of troops from Somalia, saying that the climate on Capitol Hill is too emotional for a vote right now. 65 House Republicans sent a letter to the president today calling his policy in Somalia a failure. President Boris Yeltsin today confirmed that Russia will have new parliamentary elections in mid-December. In his first nationally televised address since Monday's storming of the parliament building, the Russian leader spoke of the madness and tragedy of the past few days. Andrew Harding reports from Moscow.
Boris Yeltsin said the worst was now over. In an authoritative speech, he said the swastika and the hammer and sickle had united to try to enforce a dictatorship, but they had failed. Let us remember this madness, he said, so it will never be repeated. He called for the heaviest punishment for those involved in the parliamentary rebellion, and speaking of the heavy price paid for averting a civil war, he offered his condolences to the families of those who were killed. As for the future, Mr. Yeltsin confirmed that December elections would take place for a completely new parliament. He warned the public against apathy and urged them to vote wisely. All political parties will be eligible, except those who'd been involved in the armed rebellion. As if to underline what Mr. Yeltsin clearly hopes is a final break with Russia's turbulent political past, the government announced today that the ceremonial guard at Lenin's mausoleum has been removed. Andrew Harding for Pacifica Network News, Moscow.
A right-wing group in Haiti is calling for a general strike tomorrow. The strike is part of a campaign to prevent the return of exiled President Jean-Baptiste Aristide. Observers in Haiti say that the group known as FROP will have the support of police attachés who are expected to enforce the strike through intimidation and threats of violence. Well, the U.S. has expressed its concern to President Yeltsin about his censorship of the Russian press. State Department spokesperson Mike McCurry.
After the establishment of public order and during and after the election campaign, we fully expect full freedom of the press, full freedom of assembly for a wide spectrum of political parties and groups within Russia to be the status of the conduct of that election. We do have every indication from the Yeltsin government that that will be the case.
Yeltsin closed down 10 Russian opposition publications, including Pravda, which sympathized with hardline parliamentary rebels. On the third day of the World Trade Center bombing trial, witnesses described the horror of the day that the bomb rocked the Twin Towers. A witness today confirmed that shortly before the blast, he saw a yellow van that may have carried the bomb. Paul DiRienzo has more from New York.
Defense attorneys objected to the litany of horror stories, saying the testimony was designed to prejudice jurors. United States District Judge Kevin Duffy ruled he would allow witnesses to describe the terror of the bombing that killed six and hurt 1,000. But yesterday, Duffy expressed impatience with the testimony. And one of the witnesses, veteran Secret Service agent Jan Gilhooly, angered defense attorneys, saying he saw a yellow van seconds before a fireball vaporized the Trade Center garage. It was the first testimony that could be linked to the four defendants. Prosecutors maintain a rented yellow van carried the bomb into the garage. today, defense attorney Robert Precht asked Gilhooly if the Port Authority, the agency that owns the Trade Center, operated any yellow vans. Gilhooly acknowledged they had. Prosecutor Gilmore Childers has said no eyewitness testimony to the mechanics of the bombing would be introduced in the trial. For Pacifica National News in New York, I'm Paul DiRienzo.
And those are the stories topping the news. President Bill Clinton is facing a growing chorus of opposition to continued U.S. involvement in Somalia. Congressional members stepped up political pressure today for a swift withdrawal of American forces as the president huddled with his top national security advisors to figure out what to do next. Complicating the situation is the fact that one American is now being held hostage in Somalia by forces of factional leader Mohamed Farah Adid. Pacifica's Don Rush has this report.
It was a tired Bill Clinton who emerged from a day of White House meetings with his top national security staff. The issue, of course, was Somalia, where 78 Americans were wounded, 12 killed, and another taken hostage on Sunday in clashes with Somali factional leader Mohamed Farah Adid. Late this afternoon, the president promised to meet with congressional leaders about the next step in the Somali operation and said he would reveal his plans to the nation very soon. But for now, he left the American people with his pledge.
Our men and women in Somalia, including any held captive, deserve our full support. They went there to do something almost unique in human history. We are anxious to conclude our role there honorably, but we do not want to see a reversion to the absolute chaos and the terrible misery which existed before.
The president has ordered up more reinforcements for the U.S. troops in Somalia. Meanwhile, Clinton has been getting an earful from congressional members. Denunciations of his policy could be heard on the floors of both chambers, but perhaps the most devastating indictment came from House Republicans. 65 of them released a letter to the president declaring that the Somali operation was a disaster. House Minority Leader Bob Michael of Illinois.
In our view, the Somalia policy your administration has pursued is a failure. Therefore, we believe it imperative that you communicate to the Congress and the American people your administration's plan to secure the freedom of any American prisoners held in Somalia and your intention to expeditiously withdraw our forces in a safe and orderly manner. Americans' international standing must not be jeopardized by an indecisive and naive approach to foreign policy.
In the Senate, leaders of both parties reportedly put off for at least a week any vote on forcing a U.S. withdrawal because the climate was too emotional. Earlier this year, Congress approved non-binding resolutions calling on the president to report on his Somali policy by October 15th and to seek congressional authorization for continuing the operation. Critics of the president's policy appear to be riding a tidal wave of public opinion. The latest ABC News poll found that a majority of Americans want U.S. troops pulled out of Somalia, even if that means resumption of the famine there. But California Senator Dianne Feinstein had a grave concern about just pulling up stakes.
Well, America doesn't become a paper tiger. But any time you shoot down two helicopters and take some of our people hostage, that we will turn tail and run. And that is something a message we then send out by our actions.
There is one sticking point in the calls for a U.S. withdrawal, and that is the American hostage being held by forces of Adid. As a result, a number of critics have also called for caution. Today, Bob Michael said he would be willing to give the president room for diplomacy to get the hostage out. But then he suggested there might be other ways.
Who knows if under certain circumstances I could conceive where a very military force of some description could perform a particular task that might have to be done. And I'm not going to go beyond that because I guess I know a few things of what they'd like to do in some quarters, but not altogether sure.
Back in Somalia, a top aide to Adid said that the American soldier would be exchanged for Somalis being held by the United Nations. A videotape of a badly injured American was released to the news media and has inflamed U.S. public opinion. Here in Washington, Ali Gulaid, billed as the personal representative for General Adid, assured reporters that the American was being taken care of.
One thing I can assure you, he's safe and he's well fed.
and he's healthy, and nobody will harm him, and he will not be a shield.
And despite the standoff, Gulaid said that Adid did not want the U.S. to withdraw from Somalia. But he made it quite clear some accommodation must be reached.
We want the United States to stay in Somalia as long as they are neutral, as long as they will not interfere our political system.
Does that also mean...
As long as they will not take sides, we would like to have them in our country, and we need their technology. We need you very badly. We all love Americans. They have to cease this... This has to stop. This punitive action against the general has to stop.
As for the arrest warrant for Adid, Gulaid said his boss would be willing to go before a tribunal if others, including UN forces, were also required to do so. Adid complains that he is being singled out by the UN and says that other faction leaders have not been required to disarm. Fatou Charu, a professor at American University, believes disarmament is a key to resolving the standoff.
The other warlords are keeping quiet right now. They are not being disarmed. They are trying to, in fact, legitimize themselves by appearing to be cooperative. So they are still intact. I think that's a very crucial issue to see.
And Charu believes Adid should be included in discussions with other factional leaders for creating a new Somali state. Don Rush, Pacifica Network News, Washington.
The U.S. Census Bureau released its figures on poverty this week, and the report indicates that in 1992, for the third year in a row, the number of impoverished Americans rose. So what's the Clinton administration doing about it? Mark Beavis reports.
The Census Bureau reports the number of Americans living in poverty has reached its highest level since 1962. Almost 37 million people are poor in this country. That's nearly 15% of the population, the highest of any industrialized Western nation. And the numbers are not getting better. 1.2 million more people are living in poverty than this time last year. We called several administration offices to ask what President Clinton is doing about the increase in poverty, but numerous phone calls to those who should know were not returned. So instead we turned to policy analysts like Jared Bernstein at the Economic Policy Institute.
The Clinton administration has done very little to repair the holes in the safety net, gaping holes that have developed over the past 12, 13 years.
The administration, says Bernstein, has done one thing. It